Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections. Join them in the Ivy League of cheese education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. This is our 14th year on Heritage Radio Network. And we're up here for our first time at the Craft Malt Conference in Portland, Maine. We've got some great people, including farmers and maltsters and brewers, who've all gathered here to celebrate the most important ingredient in beer and whiskey, which is malt. So our guests are going to introduce themselves. And this talk, we're going to focus on Maine and, the agriculture and malts and just how important that story is. So we'll go around the room, and the guests will introduce themselves.
I am Joshua Buck of the Maine Malt House.
I'm Joel Alex with Blue Ox Malt House.
So one of my favorite sessions at the Craft Malt Conference was your guys' talk about Maine malt. It was malting in Maine, building a local grain chain in the Pine State. And Josh started. So why don't you just a little bit from that, tell us about how your family, your longtime family farm, how you got started and switched over to doing grains and malts?
Yeah, so we started out as a potato farm. My grandfather started back in 58. We farmed potatoes up until 2019. We were kind of doing both the malt side of things, focusing more on our grain plus doing potatoes. And then in 2019, we kind of made the switch from a potato farm to an all grain farm, focusing 100% on the malt side and growing the grains for that.
That's great. And Joel, tell us a little about your background. I know you talked about being in Belfast, Maine, something about making malt on a table.
Yeah, well, I guess a little bit about my background is I grew up in Old Town, Maine, where familiar for canoes. And while I do have an agricultural background on my dad's side, I grew up on a dairy farm in Unity. They were both educators in my lifetime, so grew up above a school that my parents started. Been hanging around Maine and was an educator, worked in community organizing and conservation, and got really interested in agricultural landscapes. Talk more about that later. But I just got really excited about malting around 2012 and its power to be an economic development tool for our state, and decided we had to have one, started working on it, and we got off the ground at our current site. Blue Ox Malt House got off the ground in Lisbon, Maine in 2015, and we've been there ever since, and we've been growing. We floor malt, so we use traditional floor malting methods. We've really leaned into that and stuck with that, and
it's great. Well, I have to say that this conference was originally scheduled for last year and it was virtual because of the pandemic. But the good part of that is I've had 2 years to think about Maine and the malt. And last year I first heard about Buck Family Farm. So tell us more about agriculture in Maine. My understanding is that Maine is lucky that there's still a lot of the same kind of farms and agriculture that was here 50 years ago.
Yeah, so we're like a potato country. That's like our main crop is potatoes up here. And they're not going anywhere. So we're going to still always be the potatoes. They're going to be the number one crop. So that's been the kind of the history of it is the potato. And there's been more potato processors in our area now. So we just got a brand new one like 2 years ago. Another source for potatoes to go. So there's not just one controlling it all. So now there's three total. So yeah, it's been our potatoes have been kind of the king crop. And then Joel and I are trying to get some malt quality barley back into the rotation of crops here, which has been a little bit of a fight with some of the farmers up home. But I think we're making a dent. We're going to get it around.
So for your family to evolve, I mean, I know I know more about apples. I know, you know, they went from whatever wholesale commodity to pick your own, and now, you know, hard cider or things that work for apple farmers. You know, as a family farm, just tell us those choices that had to be made and the timeline on that evolution, because you don't just turn around and say, okay, screw potatoes, now it's grains.
Yeah, so, yeah, I can't even think of another farm. There's one other farmer I can think of that doesn't, like, have – there's two other, I guess, that don't have potatoes on the rotation. And it was kind of a hard decision going from being, like, an all-potato farm. And, you know, my grandfather started out as a potato farmer, so it was that whole piece of it, too, is, like, you know, this is tradition almost that we're potato farmers and that we're always going to grow potatoes. Unfortunately, we had a little bit of a falling out with some family members, and then that kind of led to the exit of potatoes, kind of assisted on that. And it was still hard even with that, because we thought, like, oh, maybe we'll just plant some potatoes and still maybe maintain some of the contracts or try to do it together. But then, you know, the labor issue up in our area, we're like, you know, it's gonna be hard to find people to help with that and that type of thing. So definitely a hard decision. There are days in the fall of the year we still miss potatoes, but overall it's been very good for us. We've been really able to just focus on grain and the malt house and that type of thing. So it's been, we wouldn't go back, I guess, to the potato farm.
And then what were the first varieties of grains that you planted, and were there any specific barleys or anything that were best suited for Maine?
Yeah, oats are like really suited for like northern Maine. We can grow like really good oats. They're easy to grow. They're relatively inexpensive to grow. You still get high yields out of them. So that's kind of like everyone's go-to crop. Back 24 years ago, Canadian Malt came into our area and chose us as kind of a region, and they just picked a variety that they used in New Brunswick, and they just brought it across the border and kind of put it into our area. And it's been kind of the go-to barley variety over the years. I know some guys have switched to different ones for like feed barleys and stuff. That's kind of been everyone keeps going back to that same variety.
What's the name of that one, Josh?
The New Dale.
Thank you, Joel. You're my ally.
the name of it.
Yeah. I'm just New Dale, trying to, like, you know, yeah, get some information out there. I know what you're talking about, but listeners might not.
Yeah. But yeah, New Dale is the chosen crop from Canadian Malt, or it was up until, I don't know, like 3 years ago, the rights ran out on the name, so.
Yeah, I think Connect is the one that they're contracting now. But New Dale is still what we use at Blue Ox Malt House primarily. It's you know, it does have some pre-harvest sprouting. Anyway, we'll get more into this later. There's some challenges to it, but it's generally performed pretty well, and farmers are familiar with it, so that's good. But I know, actually, Josh, you should talk about the variety choice. I know you guys are doing a lot with different varieties too, which is cool. That's something you guys are able to do.
Yeah, so we've been doing the variety trials on our farm. Who hosts the variety trials? Is that the university system? Does it?
Right? Yeah, it's the Cooperative Extension.
Cooperative Extension. They put on some variety trials. I think they're still doing them in Orno and up in Prescott. So they've done it on our farm for the last like 3 years where they plant. A few years ago, we took two varieties out of the trials that they performed. You know, they're just doing very small plots with them, so sometimes it's hard to tell. But we chose two. We did to scale commercial size plots of those, 10 acres of each, and planted them with New Dale, the three of them in strips, and I've seen how they performed. And then we chose a new variety out of that to grow commercially. Last year, we grew 100 acres of it to see how it performed. So far, it's performed very well in the field. We had really high yields, which farmers would like, low protein levels, but we haven't had any luck malting it yet. It seemed to be a very dormant variety, so we have to let it. It's got to be cold for a really long time in order to break its dormancy, which, like Joel said, we're used to New Dale, which is kind of a hot variety. We can malt it right out of the field. There is no dormancy on it at all, so it's a little bit of a trick. We got to be a little patient, I think, which sometimes we're not always as patient as we want to be.
You mean from the time you harvest it until it can germinate?
Yeah, so it's basically just got to get really cold. You got to freeze it in order to break its dormancy. So we've tried it a few times throughout the winter, hoping that it'd be had enough time. And each time it doesn't seem to be enough, and it takes too long to malt for us. So
a lot of work goes into making my favorite glass of beer, doesn't it, Joel?
It absolutely does. I mean, and it does go back to the farmers like Josh. There's several other farmers that we work with in Maine as well who are making the investment. You know, I'm going to be a little more optimistic than Josh. I mean, maybe potatoes will be king, but, you know, I have to believe that we're going to get more barley here in Maine. And this is probably a stat that some of the listeners might know, is that nationally barley crop is grown basically 67%, 2/3 of it goes to malting and brewing. Here in Maine, of the, you know, 50-ish thousand acres we have in potatoes, that also means there's rotation crops being grown in that. Josh, I think you said there's like 11,000 acres of barley.
Yeah, that's what was reported on the site that I found, and it was 11,000 acres of barley. So.
So, you know, and then maybe a third of that is in malting barley varieties, primarily going to that Canada malting contract. So we're actually reversed in sort of the trend, where instead of 2/3, we're 1/3 for malting barley and the rest goes primarily to feed markets. So I think there's a lot more opportunity for us to do more, here and hopefully raise barley in particular. But I mean, I know both, you know, I don't know the work going into, but we also do malt oats. We malt rye, triticale, wheat is probably the one that we malt most. There's probably one or two more that I'm forgetting, but I don't know. Have you done any?
Any what?
I don't know. Alternative grain, like what?
Yeah, we do. We malt a lot of red wheat. So like this year, we're gonna plant on our farm alone. We're gonna plant 2,100 acres of grain. I think the last number I heard was 1,200 of that's going to be malt barley. And then like, there's going to be like 800 of that's going to be wheat. So we do raise quite a bit of wheat. We malt a lot of red wheat, like what Joel said. So then we do a lot of oats too, but it seems like there's always a lot of oats available around because there's still a bunch of guys that grow oats and they're really good oats. So we kind of get those from anywhere.
And then, so Josh, when did you realize that you would also going to be a malt house? Those steps, just a little of the history, and then we'll get Joel talking in about how markets developed and everything.
Yeah, so it was in 2014, we were looking to diversify our farms. We were still a potato crop at the time. It was my father and his two uncles on the farm, and then myself. I have three brothers, so there was four of us in the next generation looking to enter the farm. And, you know, just more mouths to feed, so we were going to have to grow the farm to if we wanted to be part of it. And so we started looking at just alternative crops other than potatoes. And we first looked into hops. We were going to be a big hop farm was our thought. We seen this craft beer thing kind of coming alive. And so we're like, yeah, we'll grow hops. Those look pretty easy. We just got to build a trellis system and, you know, go and plant them. It's like they grow again every year. So you only have to plant them once. And we ordered a bunch of rhizomes, ordered all the cables and stuff. It was about this time of year to be planted in 2014. And then we're like, shoot, we should go talk to a brewery to see if they want to buy our hops before we get ahead of ourselves here, which we are already kind of ahead of ourselves. We talked to a brewery, and during that visit, they're like, well, let's give you a tour of the brewery and show you how beer's made. First thing he said is like, yeah, we start with putting barley in. And we're like, oh shit, there's barley in beer. No idea. We're young drinkers at the time. So, yeah. And then he's like, yeah, all you do is you got to malt it. Then we can use it. And we're like, oh, okay, no big deal. We'll malt it and we'll send you barley. We got barley on our farm. And, that was kind of the spark that we needed. We started looking into how malt was made and the process. And, so that was in 2015. That's how we had a building that was a potato storage. Our contract was getting cut, essentially. We seen that kind of coming, so this building was going to be opened up. There's lots of floor space, so we decided that maybe we'll try putting in a small floor malting system that we can test the waters with. And yeah, it's kind of taken off since then.
It's pretty funny. There's an English beer writer that I really respect, Pete Brown, and he when he did some of his early studies, he said most people think that beer is made from chemicals. So I think if you didn't even realize barley went into the beer, yeah, right. I guess we're all just getting educated. And then, you know, Blue Ox and those next steps. And really then how you like figured out that this was going to work and maybe some of the first breweries that you did get to work with.
Yeah, sure. So my story getting to craft malt came from the other direction. Josh came from like the farm up. I was I think I mentioned community organizer. I was an organizer. I was a educator, and I was getting ready to go back and study food systems and how we can develop more robust, resilient food systems as a tool for rural economic development and keeping agricultural landscapes alive and healthy. In that process of paying attention, I realized that Maine, and I know I said this the other day, but I mean, I think it was malting was almost inevitable. And Josh and me were the two people that, you know, well, Josh and his family, and me were the people who took advantage of that opportunity. That's because Maine has historically been a natural resource exporter. A lot of what comes out of Maine is been, you know, it's lobster, it's potatoes, maybe it's raw milk, it's wood, it's lumber. It's not the finished product. It's not always like the furniture from the lumber, or, you know, increasingly it is, you know, there's French fries and things coming out of this, and there's more, you know, cheese creameries and ice cream and things coming out of Maine these days. But we were missing a value added opportunity, and that was something that we really needed to keep these rural areas alive and farming viable for them. So I was looking at how to increase access to premium mid-sized markets and really saw, you know, I was talking to a home brewer, I was talking to a craft brewer. I was a home brewer, and we were just like, yeah, the same kind of conversation. It's like, well, barley and beer, like, you can't use local grain. And he's like, no, because we need to malt it. I was like, that's like, why are we not doing this? That was in July of 2012. Went through the process of applying to grad school, got in. But in that process, after I got my application off, was like, well, what am I going to do if I don't get in? And I thought that malting idea was really cool. So I started to do research behind it and decided that I would much rather, you know, try to build this capacity here, because, you know, we had all this malting barley being grown in the state, as Josh mentioned, since about 2000. We've had malting contracts going to Canada. The brewers that were trying to use Maine grain were buying that back through a distributor in New York, through BSG, in Country Malt Group, or no, maybe it wasn't BSG. I think it was Country Malt Group. And, you know, we were just missing out on all that value added. So, yeah, I just basically from there, the first thing I did was I took business courses, because I was all in nonprofits. I was all in education. I had no business background, no malting background, a limited homebrewing background, but took some business courses, and then I took some malt courses, and then I just slowly built up the momentum to Blue Ox Malt House. So I don't know. I think I'm going on too long, but ask me another question later. I'll say more.
You're not going on too long. Now, Josh, keep going with this.
Keep going with that. I think he nailing it here. but yeah, no, there was that. It's funny because Joel started in 2012, the idea, and then he was ahead of us, and we didn't even think to look to see if there's another malt house in Maine or anything. It was just kind of, because we were doing it from the other angle of just like, hey, we got barley, and this brewer down in Bangor said he would take it if we malted it up, is how he put it. And he's going to malt that up. And so we kind of just dove into it that way. And then after a while, I think we did we contacted Sean Sullivan, the Maine Brewers Guild, which is like, the Brewers Guild has been awesome for us. I mean, just to get your name, because a lot of times you call up a brewery and they just, you know, they get calls from people all the time. They don't want to talk. So have like someone like Sean go in and say, hey, I'm with the Maine Brewers Guild. You need to talk to this guy because this is what they're doing. And like kind of opened a lot of doors for us. And we were able to, I think we sent out like a survey and sent it to Sean, and he like made sure that there was like 40 breweries in the state at the time, made sure all 40 of them got to see our letter, see what we were doing. And that kind of helped give us a little bit of traction for when we did show up with a bag of malt. We weren't complete strangers to them, but
yeah. What were some of the first beers that were made in Maine with your malts, or the first breweries that worked with it? Maybe some of that lessons that you learned.
Yeah, I think the first person that just like went for it, I remember Jake and I, we loaded up the pickup with as much grain as we could fit in the back seat. And then we just did cold knocks on doors. And of course, there's only 42. So it didn't take us too many trips to hit them all. But I remember we went to the Liberal Cup in Hollowell, Maine. And Jeff there, we talked to him and he was just into the story. And then he's like, well, how many bags you got in your pickup? And we're like, oh, we got six left. And he's like, well, I need six to do one beer. And we're like, all right. And he's like, I'll take them all. And then we wanted to give them to him because we're just giving out like promotional bags at the time. And he's like, nope, I'm going to pay for at least half of them. So we gave him half and he wrote us a check right there for the other half. And he brewed the next day with it. And we got his feedback. And I don't know, that kind of helped give us a little bit of momentum into it. And of course, we learned early on that the breweries do communicate quite a bit. They're the open communication. So if you make a good wave in there, it's probably going to ripple through them all. So, but yeah, that was the first one that I remember. He just did a full batch of beer, served it through his tasting room. So.
Right. And Joel, what's some of the first breweries that you got to work with? And I'm sure you had to cut your teeth.
Yeah. Well, I was just trying to reflect. And I actually heard that story from Jeff. Interesting. So it's the same story. So
yeah,
you know, validated. But I was like trying to think, did I have a moment like that? And, you know, for whatever reason, I like can't really remember. I do know that when I was malting, so you had asked me earlier about being in Belfast, and I guess in my process of building it out, my first kind of quote unquote malt house was like doing a few hundred pounds on a stainless steel table in a cooler in a shared kitchen space in Belfast, Maine. And the first brewer to malt with that grain was the father of the brewer up in Kennebec River. But yeah, we just like went, it was a home brewer with a very glorified system. I think he used to, oh man, I'm sorry if you're listening to this. I'm trying to remember all the breweries and pull them back. I used to know all the breweries in the names in Maine up until there's 89, and then I lost count. And I can't in my mind keep track of everybody anymore. When I started, there's only 33. But yeah, we like went down to Waldoboro and went in his garage and brewed a beer, and it was delicious and amazing. That was the first brewer to use this. As far as first like brewery, oh man, I don't know. But I mean, it probably come up. I mean, Allagash was definitely one of the early adopters. And to reiterate what Josh was saying, I mean, the guild and the community here has been amazingly supportive of us. I think there's a lot of probably reasons they're doing a lot around building a Maine beer brand, and they've been super successful with that. And that's definitely had a rising tide floats all boats mentality. And so it's hard to know the first brewery we worked with because we were embraced, as Josh said, as craft maltsters by this community. And they all just sort of started piling with us and using us, you know, probably mostly, you know, internal or draft rooms. I mean, I think probably both of us started in Allagash at their internal staff system that they kind of just brew a keg or two, barrel or two, and maybe it's half barrel. I don't know. I forget. So long ago, it's been 10 years. Jimmy, I can't remember all these details.
Well, that's why I feel like for 2 days, all we've been is talking about this stuff. And I leave here saying, God, I just want to go to Novari Res and have some of those beers. And thanks to both of you, because I think last year when the conference was almost going to happen, we did talk about going to Novari Res and having a little mixer where you guys would help curate some craft malt beers. And your staff did do it. And hats off to David and especially Katie at Blue Ox Malt, because it was awesome. And I want to talk about those beers, because I know that either or both of you, your malts are in those beers. And, you know, the first one that Sean at Novari Res recommended was the Northwood, which was made with some Blue Ox Malt. And he said, Dunkel. And when I was thinking a malt-focused tasting and I had it was my first beer of the day. I was like, I want the Dunkel. Do you know anything about that beer or brewery?
They're over in New Hampshire. And I should have, and a shout out to Katie and Dave. They really did the lion's work behind pulling that together. So, thanks for that acknowledgement. Dave definitely knows more. I should have talked to him, but, yeah, Northwoods are over there. It's all of our Munich malt. It's actually our dark, we just won a bronze medal for our light Munich malt, but that's not the malt. It's not the malt in there. But it's delicious. I love it. I think it's very sessionable. I love the toasty character. I do enjoy like more like grassy or bitter flavors, but I love this. It's just smooth. It's not that bitter. It's just really forward on, I think, the bready character. And I think the guys at Northwood did a great job.
No, that was really great. And I looked at the list and most of the breweries I didn't know. I know there was one that was here at the conference, the Bissell Pilsner, and on the can it says made with 100% Maine malt.
Yeah, they use a bunch of our Pilsner malt, so they're why Bissell Brothers are our top customer right now. So they move the most volume of grain as of right now. So, and their Pilsner is very delicious.
Yeah, and there was quite what I love about malt is that list has quite a variety of styles. You know, and there was even, I know John Hall, our great beer editor friend, posted yesterday that he had the Norway, and it was a smoked beer, which we were also, we're hoping to try that too. Do you know whose malt is in Norway? And that's a great brewery, right? Norway, not too far from Portland.
I'll say that Norway is a great brewery, and they're also a great gastropub, so they've got great beer and food. They do use, I know they do use both of us, so... I don't know. Maybe both of us are in that. It's hard. I was telling someone else the other day, they're like, what beers have your malt in this list? And it's like, I don't know. I work with 120 breweries and I send the malt out and I don't know what they do with it all of the time. It's hard to track. They sometimes don't know what they're going to do with it when they order it. So it's like, we're often not the only supplier. So it sometimes is hard to know which beers are in, but the smoked malt did come from us. I believe it was Applewood smoked. I might have been wrong there. We do smoke malts as specialties sort of on a custom basis for our brewers to the specs. So we've done Applewood smoked, cherry smoked, maplewood smoked. We got a distiller in Vermont that's taken a lot of maplewood smoke. We've done oak barrel staves smoked. We'll do all sorts of stuff with the smoked malts.
Is it usually by the request of the brewer?
It's a product that we took an old steep germination kiln vessel and converted to a cold smoker when we realized that we had designed it as a pilot system. But when we put in our floor malting, we realized we had way more quality control over our actual production system than we did over that system. So we repurposed it as a cold smoker because a pilot system that's less precise than your production system is pretty useless. It's a small enough scale for us at 300 or 400 pounds that we can really just custom smoke. So we offer it. We have a few products we might carry on hand, but largely it's whatever the brewers want. We're willing to work with them on it.
Yeah, I've talked to you a couple of times, or you, or and I talked to Josh before on the radio. I still couldn't believe that there's 120 breweries in, or more in Maine that are using your malt. Seems like Maine. You said that. I know in your talk yesterday, you talked about that Maine had been exporting the raw materials from lobsters to lumber, to barley and potatoes. The current, in our era, what's responsible for this change in Maine? Is it ag policy? Is there university behind it? Is there money?
So you're saying for like what's keeping bringing industry into Maine?
Yeah, the changes to go from barley to maltsters to have more breweries to processing, you know, lobsters for Luke's Lobster.
Yeah, I think there's, I think people are just realizing that you can value add it in Maine rather than sending someone else to value add. And then Joel can talk more about like the economic development side of it and how we've gotten funding and stuff like that to help us along and help bring that close the loop, as you might say.
Yeah, it's definitely been a journey. I can't claim to have an answer for that. I can have ideas and I'm happy to share about why I think that's the case. I definitely think that for a while now in the policy and the research, we've seen this opportunity. And in 2010, a group came together, and I think it was Maine Food Strategy, but it might have that wrong. Maine Food Strategy is at least doing like a 10-year plan, and increased value add was definitely part of that. The state of Maine for a long time has been developing a brand, Real Maine. It used to be Get Real, Get Maine. Now it's Real Maine. Really trying to build that quality value. And I think Maine has benefited historically from having a brand that is associated with quality and food, like with the lobsters. And so the state has put a lot of economic development money into just promoting Maine as a brand. I think beer, Portland's a food city. Anyone who hasn't been to Portland, Maine, should come and try the food. It's great. And the guilds, the Brewers Guild, I think did a great job taking that. And I mean, we're exporting beer. I mean, obviously biased, but I think Portland, Maine is one of the best beer cities in the world. The quality, the focus on the quality, I think that had a lot of to do with the founders here, especially like Rob Todd at Allagash, who I know everyone looks up to, his focus on not compromising on the beer, really set a really strong tone for our industry here. And it's hard to come to Portland, Maine and find a bad beer. there's so many breweries and pretty much anywhere you go, you're going to have a world-class beer. And they built on that main brand. And I guess the whole point is like, this has been intentional work that's been done by groups. There's also been a lot of economic development money put behind it. That clout has reached the policy makers. They're aware of what's going on. I think one thing we've done really successfully here in Maine and is talk about how multigrains are really part of an overall healthy food system. And I personally, from my previous work, in sustainable development, really think food is such a powerful tool to think about socially, economically, ecologically developing towards sustainability. We all eat every day. It touches every part of our lives. It touches our health. It touches our economics. It touches our energy policy. It's cultural. We all have a relationship to food, and it's such a powerful place for us to be. And malting is a really key part of that because we have the rotation crops. It's the grain that we use is grown in rotation with other food locally here. And then also the grain that we use and Josh, I know you, I don't know, but I think you have other customers who are not brewers and distillers. But I mean, I know that some of the grain I buy also goes to flour mills or to other places. So it's literally the same grain that's going into the food that we eat. And what's great is we have this amazing economic development industry in craft beer, and that, craft brewers and craft beer drinkers can support agriculture in Maine by buying beer, and we can move that grain to farms, either farms that we work with or directly in the case of farms, like right to their farm, and help make farming more viable. Anyway, I think I'm again going a little bit off, but
no, it's great. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Coming this spring, we're working on something big for opening soon.
Opening a restaurant can sometimes take months or even years.
So I have this one consulting client that's been 3 months away from opening for the past year.
And I had a calendar reminder show up today.
And the reminder was that our goal was to open tomorrow.
But this spring, you'll be able to hear it in just a few hours.
On March 30th, he had passed away. And then on March 31st, he had come back to life. And then on April 2nd, he had passed away again. And I was like, okay, my regards to the family. I don't even know how to receive this information.
So tune in as we follow one of Brooklyn's best and brightest young chefs and restaurateurs on their journey from start to open doors.
Alex, you need to put more money in. We're out. We can't pay anybody.
He is the worst. Oh my God, that guy.
It's the build.
Subscribe to Opening Soon from Heritage Radio Network, wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections.
It feels like a gift to be able to give this gift to people because I know that from my own experiences, I know how valuable, consolidated, incredible training resources are.
They offer an in-depth education on all things cheese, as well as an active network for peer support and career development.
You can pop over to the Quad, which is our social networking and engagement app. And so that's a really fun and dynamic aspect of Cheese State University.
Cheese State's three-part course is designed for seasoned pros and entry-level mongers alike and covers all the skills one needs to perform on the cheese counter.
The structure of Cheese State University is all based on the Cheese State University Field Guide. And that is a three-volume resource. It's all digital, online.
At the end of the course, students will be ready to ace the field guide assessment and earn their Cheese State Scholar Certificate.
Another resource is a video series where we tackle sort of like these thornier questions that you can get on the cheese counter, like what is rennet and like why is this cheese so expensive and can pregnant people even eat cheese?
At Cheese State, you're among experts, you're among scholars, you're among cheese lovers, and most importantly, you are a monger. Join them in the Ivy League of Cheese Education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's March 18th, 2023. I'm at the Craft Malt Conference in Portland, Maine. And if you like this, join us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. So I've got Joel Alex from Blue Ox Malt House and Josh Buck from Maine Malt House, two and probably the only two maltsters in Maine who are doing amazing work. So Joel was just talking about how Maine has really been supportive, and you know, we think of not just lobsters but the beer being really great. Josh, did you want to say anything else about that before I ask you another question?
No, you can ask me another question.
Okay, so back to the beer. So again, at the list that lined up for the conference and for, I mean, I love the beers that I've had up here, and that Novari Res, the Blue Ox team lined up some regional malt beers. Allagash 16 Counties. It's one beer that one time I got one keg in New York for a festival a few years ago. And I know that people outside of the state will think, oh, if I'm getting a, you know, regional malt beer, I'll get Allagash 16 Counties. Do you want to tell me anything about that? Maybe the malts are in it. I have a feeling some of your malts are in there.
Yeah, I think we have, I'm not exactly sure, because like Joel said earlier, once our malt goes out the door, it's hard to say exactly where what happens with it. But I think we have some base malt in that, some Mapleton Pale in that. I'm pretty sure they're only distributing that in Maine. As they kind of reeled in their focus on it. They changed the recipe up a few years ago and made it even better. And they brought distribution just to Maine on it, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had a glass of it yesterday with Branch, who's one of he's a brewhouse manager at Allagash, and it wasn't like a huge malt forward beer. It was very subtle, and the yeast profile was really good. And again, it was something that I would want to drink all day. And you know, why is it? I always feel like if I'm getting a local malt or a regional malt beer, to me, it's better. Now, is that just because I'm biased? Or does it actually taste better?
Oh, all right. To me, I think it is. Actually, this is good. I have an answer for this because I was just talking to Lindsay Barr of Draft Lab, and we were talking. I just was asking the question of, does malt flavor really translate? How does it really translate to beer as a finished product? And it's hard because it's, you know, she was saying this. It's not a one-to-one. You know, there's so much that goes into beer that it's always going to be hard to make it, you know, okay, I have this really beautiful, biscuity, bready malts. You know, does it translate perfectly to, you know, bready, biscuity flavor in the beer? And there's so many, you know, as your listeners will know, and beer is so complicated. So she's like, you know, it's not perfect, but some of the studies that she did, early on and other people showed that if you like a, if you like a malt, we as like a malt steep tea, people would list their preference. And then they did a two beers with those malts, and 75% preferred the beer with the same malt that they preferred. So there definitely is a correlation there. And then I went off this little tangent. I have to be careful with this metaphor because I was saying it to a bunch of economic development tour that came through and almost went in the wrong direction with it. But it's like, if, you know, I heard early on, you know, brewers talk about yeast being the soul of beer. And I was like, okay, well, so if yeast is the soul of the person, you know, I was like, I'd be like, hops would be like the clothes. They're like the flashy things that everyone sees. And you can dress up anyone in clothes and make them look really good. But, you know, what's under the clothes, right? I mean, you want a healthy body underneath there. You want to support. And I went with like, what happens when the clothes go off? Anyway, that's where it started to went sideways in my tour, and I had to stop myself. But it's like, but it is like, you know, it's about what's supporting that whole thing. I mean, beer really is, malt is really the body of the beer, and you want a really healthy, robust body. And, you know, your clothes are going to look better, you know, on your body if you're chisel healthy. Abs, right? I mean, well, yeah, that's, you know, you don't have to have chisel abs, but just whatever your body type is, there's lots of body types out there. You know, take care of yourself. You're going to feel better. You will look better, you know, just taking care of yourself. And
so with a good malt, you're good enough to eat or drink. Yeah. Okay. Drink me. Yeah. Okay. So, Josh, what beer, you know, there's been a lot of really great craft malt beers here at the conference and at Novari Res. Is there one that you've enjoyed drinking?
Oh man, the beer question. We get this asked all the time. What's your favorite beer? And, you know, our go-to answer is like, well, I don't know which one's my favorite because I haven't tasted them all yet. So that's usually my answer. But I was drinking we were drinking some Sacred Profanes down at Novari Res, and those were very delicious. We also had there's a Nitro Stout. I don't remember who that was by, but that was very good.
Yeah, the Sacred Profane, we got to give them a shout out. It was a Czech Black Lager it was funny because I had the Northwood, the Dunkel, and after about three of them, I was like, okay, I want to go to the next level. And I didn't get a chance to talk to someone. So yesterday I told them the same story, and Lacey at Novari Res said, you got to try this Sacred Profane, the Czech Dark Lager. It had that roastiness that was just what I needed. I probably also should have gone up to that smoke, the Rauch beer too, from Norway. So it's cool. Hey, back to this conference. So what I've learned about this conference is that it's been going back to 10 years, and it's not a consumer conference. There's farmers, maltsters, and some brewers. I know that some of the big breweries like Nuglaris and Ballast Point did send someone, which is probably exciting for you guys in the industry. But the kind of the showpiece of this event is what? The Malt Cup Awards. So if you guys want to tell me about that, I know that Blue Ox won a couple, and congratulations. But let's talk about what that means and who do you share that information with? Is that more of an industry thing to help you with your brewers, or are consumers caring that their beer was made with a Malt Cup award-winning malt?
Well, I don't know what I'm telling people yet because you just won them last night. And so I'll let you can follow up with me. I'll let you know.
So tell us what you won. What and for which malts?
It was really awesome to be here in Portland with this industry and conference, which has some great roots going back to Farmer Brewer and Andrea Stanley in Massachusetts, who I got to do a shout out for her. And the work that so many people have done to build up to having the hot steep method, to being able to then do the lab analysis. And anyway, there's a lot of work behind this, and that is actually extremely meaningful to me. That's the fact that we can have this award at all and do it and do an analysis in such depth on craft malt is already the win. You know, as far as us, we got a bronze medal for the pale category, pale malt category, and for the light Munich category. And so it's really cool. I have to 100% shout out to my team on that. It was most meaningful part for me was that, you know, my team is in there doing hard work every single day, making great malt, and, you know, that to have that validated and have them be able to be here with me in Portland rather than if we were somewhere else was just awesome. I'm not going to cry on it, but it can give me a little teary. I could get myself teared up about it. I mean, they're amazing. They're awesome. I have an amazing team, and regardless of what we tell our customers, but you know, I'm just so proud of them, and that it's been the most meaningful part of it so far. And yeah, we'll probably put something out there better malts once you figure it out, but it's still fresh.
And you guys got to work on your Instagram, just so you know. There's not a lot of posts, but I did see there was a beer that I had in November, my first time in Portland. You had a malt, I think it might have been a chocolate malt that Urban Farm Fermentary made into a chicory stout that I'd had.
Yeah, we've put out some chocolate rye malt, worked with a roaster locally. We found that had some extra capacity. And that's been a really fun product. It's kind of reliant on the availability of the roaster. So it's not always available for all the brewers out there, but we'll get it back soon. That's great. I don't know. Sorry. You're asking about the roasting. We're trying to branch out, do the roasted malts. Urban Farm Fermentary did a great job with that beer. I liked it.
Oh, that's great. And then but back to the malt cup. So you guys, what's the process? You submit your malts, and then how do they judge it? I ran into Hannah Turner from Montana State University. She says, oh, one time you got to sit in through all the judging. So how do they judge it?
Yeah, so what they did is, like, you send all your samples in. We didn't submit any this year. Probably should have, but we got busy. But we were judges for it. So what they did is they sent us out samples. I can't remember which category. I think we were in the pills category, maybe, of judging. So they sent us a bunch of these, like, samples, and they're all just numbered, so you don't know where they came from or anything like that. And you do the hot seat method on them to make it into a little nice little malt tea. And then we had our whole, there's three of us that were actual judges, but we got everyone involved at the malt house. And so everyone could kind of get in on it, and we did the tasting on it. And then you're basically ranking them from which one you like the most to the worst, I guess.
So it's based on the hot steep method.
Yes. Yeah. That's how it's based on. And there was other notes in that we filled out of different things. And then it was like, kind of like what are some notes you found in each one? And then, like, what's your overall favorite one out of that category?
And then, so these malts were sent from all over the world, right?
Yeah. And we don't, at the time when you did it, you don't even know where they're from or anything. You just get a box in the mail with some little bags in it. And yeah, you kind of go from there.
Wow. You know, I was impressed when I walked in. I came here thinking Maine. And I knew a lot of just the backstory of New York State from, you know, grains and malt and meeting Andrea Stanley when everyone was just getting started. But I didn't realize I'd walk in and someone, I'd say, where are you from? And someone's Ohio. And there's a whole bunch of these farmers from Ohio, and you're from Minnesota, and you're malting. Oh, the Danish guy is doing a new technology with enzymes for something. You know, it's pretty wild. I met a maltster from Norway too. Norway, the country, not the town, right?
Yeah, I met him as well. And I was also blown away. I was like, oh, you're from Norway, Maine? And he's like, no, Norway. And I was like, wow.
I could tell he was from Norway. His sweater game was on point. So I was like, you're definitely from Scandinavia.
Oh, yeah, it was a little different. But you know, a lot of Canadians. I talked to Joe Hamill from Alberta. He also had a long-time family farm that was growing barley, and they morphed into more craft. So neat people. It's a really great experience, and I want to thank you guys for encouraging me to come up and for inviting me. Anything else, a question that you guys have for each other, or a question that or a topic that you that people have been talking about here, a little bit of insider stuff before we close out? Because this conference, everyone in Crab Malt is here or online, and there's a lot of really smart people here.
Oh, put me on the spot. Insider information on the craft malt. Yeah. Oh, what? They can't, we can't get rid of all of our trade. Yeah. All our trade secrets. As, no.
Digging here.
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess it really, it's reiterating what you said. I mean, you know, the Malt Cup did have six countries represented, three Canadian provinces. And I actually forget the amount of states, but an enormous amount of states, as well. It really is an amazing community. It's so lovely for me to spend time with these other people that understand. I mean, I think there's around 150 of us at this conference. And I mean, in my day-to-day life, I have to explain, I have to explain every day what I do and like why I do it. And so just to be able to connect and get these, I kind of like hate this word, but I'll use it, synergies and the ideas and hear what other people are doing and get inspired to bring it back to your malt house is really just, it's really lovely. And I guess it's not a trade secret.
Well, what's one term or word that you would use that you could instantly say to someone at this conference and they would get that in your daily life you wouldn't even utter?
Yeah, I know pretty much any malt beer. Like, yeah,
salad
and muffin. Oh, if I just say, you know, it's an SGK. It's an SGK vessel. And yeah. if your listeners know what that is, it's part of the trade secret. You have to look it up.
Yeah, we still get asked the question, like, oh, you guys do hops? I'm like, no, we don't do hops. Like, yeah, because everyone just thinks of hops when they think of beer. They're like, oh, so you guys make hops? Like, no, we don't make hops.
Or barley breeding. Yeah. Talk about winter varieties, spring varieties, facultative varieties.
Yeah, I think it's cool too. The conference is like just not too many places where you can talk about like equipment. I do a lot of like the infrastructure and building out at the malt house, and so I'm always fascinated by how other people malt and like how they develop their systems and stuff like that. So it's cool just to have people that you can talk to and ask them and they understand about the pumping grain or floor mechanisms. And it's just, I don't know, to me that's kind of like the little behind the scenes on people's malt houses that you don't really get any results.
Okay, if anyone listened this far, SGK, somebody's gonna message me and tell me what the hell that is. But now last question for Josh, walk us through again malting 101 since your farm. So after you harvest, the first steps, overview, harvesting, what do? Do you store it then to the malt? And then what kind of malting are you doing?
So you want to go all the way from the farm. So yeah, okay. So from the farm, yeah, our big thing is we're out of the field, we're drying that grain down, bringing it down to the moisture content that we want to store it. We're then storing it for long term. So we're freezing it, then we're bringing it into the malt house and cleaning it. And then it's going into a steep tank. We're steeping it for up to 48 hours, and it's going into our germination kiln vessel where we're germinating it for 4 days, and the whole vessel is also a kiln. We're kilning it down, and then we're knocking it out of there back through the cleaning line into packaging and on a truck and port on the next day in a glass 2 weeks later.
Awesome. And then 2 weeks, wow. And then, Joel, are you guys doing that same system, or are you doing floor malting?
Yeah, so we do floor malting. So our grain is grown up in the same area that that Josh is in. We receive that in super sacks right now. We'll be moving to a truckload soon. And then we load up about 5 tons into our steep tanks, which is in environmentally controlled, cool, moist room, which is our germination room. It will stay in there for a couple days, put it on our floor for 3.5-4 days, gets moved to our kiln for day and a half. We'll bag it up, you know, and at that point we probably are just shipping it out. We do offer milling, so we'll sometimes have to, you know, mill up some of that. But then it gets down to the brewers and at their loading docks or wherever they're receiving, and they make beer out of it. It's great.
I want to thank you guys for joining me, Joel from Blue Ox Malt House and Josh from Maine Malt House. And for our listeners, as you know, this is part of what makes your beer good. And I was just really proud to be up here and to meet everyone at the Craft Malt Conference. So thanks for having me. Thanks to Joel and thanks to Josh. Thanks to Armin, our engineer, who'll be cleaning this up. And any last words from you guys?
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, Jimmy. I know we did a couple months ago. I was on. I really enjoyed that. And so thank you again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for bringing craft malt to your listeners. You know, I think part of our story is helping people understand where the grain comes from and why it's important. And any opportunity we can have to tell and share that story is an important one. So thank you.
And a big shout out to Jesse Bussard, your executive director, Craft Malters Guild. She's really kept this thing going in the pandemic. I actually got connected with the Craft Malters Guild during the pandemic with some online sessions on the North American Guild of Beer Writers. And I think I first saw Hannah Turner and Emily Hudo talking about craft malt. So big shout out to your organization. Thanks again for inviting me up here. And we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.